Folks, if you've turned on the evening news, it looks like the whole world is on fire. And somebody who actually predicted something like this happening in the United States is coming on with us today. That's on today's Hot Zone.
This is the Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
Hey folks, I'm Chuck Holton. Thanks for watching the show and thanks for being a patron of the show. We've got a lot of new patrons coming on. You can support the show $3 a month at a minimum over at patreon.com/hotzone, or you can go to victormarks.com/hotzone. And I would recommend that one because Patreon has been supporting Black Lives Matter and I don't really want to support them anymore for that. So with that said, I want to bring on Matt Bracken. Now, Matt is an author and actually a really good one. I've started reading his novels years ago, probably 10 years ago, and was really struck. When you read in the genre of, you know, action and adventure, and especially these days with self-publishing, there's a lot of garbage out there to wade through. And I was really happy to find a well-written, well-researched group of novels called the Enemies Foreign and Domestic series by Matt Bracken. So I've been following him for a long time, but he's got an article out that I wanted to talk to him about today. Matt, thanks for coming on with us.
You're welcome.
You bet. Matt's in Florida and sailor, former Navy SEAL and extraordinaire, et cetera. Just give us a short version of your background, just 60 seconds.
Yeah, I was born in Baltimore in 1957. Went to high school in Baltimore. Excuse me. Went to the University of Virginia in late 70s. Was fortunate enough to I was Naval ROTC. I was fortunate enough to get my wish, which was to be sent to BUDS training in 1979. Made it through class 105, got sent to the East Coast, teams, UDT and SEAL teams at that time. I eventually was a platoon commander in Beirut. And, after that, I got out. I was really never had an intention to be a career guy. There was no war on, you know, there was no action. It was peacetime Cold War. And I was looking at, years and years of being a staff puke before I could ever get another platoon. So I got out. If I'd been an enlisted man and I could have just stayed as an operator, I might have stayed in. I was interested only at that time in being an operator, a shooter, mm-hmm. not a staff guy. So I got out at that time. Actually, I stayed in the reserves through the 80s, but you know, my active duty time was over pretty quick.
Got it. So the reason I wanted to bring you on today is just because you wrote this article back in 2012 that almost perfectly describes – the evening news today, the riots, the shootings, the just general free floating anger we see all around the country. And in the article, well, let me first have you give us an overview of what the article was about from your point of view, and then I'll ask you some questions about it.
Okay. Well, first of all, you know, to put my SEAL background aside, that was like one chapter of my life, but I was a Russian studies major in college, and I've always been a voracious reader and student of history. 95% of my education took place outside of a high school or college campus on my own time. Probably reading, you know, two books a week for all my life. And really being fascinated with special warfare, with irregular warfare, now fourth generation warfare, insurgencies, counterinsurgencies, doing a lot of studying of wars like Northern Ireland during the Troubles, 70s, 80s, 90s, Argentina in the 70s, Spanish Civil War, Bosnia, breakup of Yugoslavia, what happened in Rwanda. And I started pulling together a lot of, you know, of concepts. I think that it's very dangerous for Americans. The concept of what quote unquote American exceptionalism, it's a beautiful thought, right? That we have this great constitution that's lasted for 240 years. It's an amazing, fantastic thing. We all took the oath to swear to defend the constitution, enemies foreign and domestic. I'm down with that. But the concept that somehow God has us in the palm of his hand, and nothing like what we see happening in Somalia or in, you know, Mexico with the cartels or Venezuela, nothing like that could ever happen here because of quote unquote American exceptionalism. And I see that America, in my way of looking at it, America is the greatest target globally of not only, you know, the Chinese communists, the Russians that never really gave up on the Soviet Union, you know, they consider it like a big disaster that the Soviet Union fell. Obviously, the globalists, largely writ, global corporatists, that America standing as like a beacon of freedom, rule of law, free republic, constitutional republic, it has to be wrecked. It has to be destroyed. So this has been like the main project of these enemies of our free republic for many decades, going all the way back in to the last century. You know, Lenin and Stalin had the idea that they could just sweep from country to country using the Comintern and subversion techniques. You know, send in spies, pay off union leaders, assassinate, threaten. There was a guy in Italy named Antonio Gramsci. He said, that's never going to happen. Italians and other Europeans and Americans, they love their country. They're founded in religion. They're founded in patriotism. They will never just be rolled over by sending in, you know, secret agents and using bribery and threats. What you have to do is pour poison on their cultural roots. You have to deracinate them, cut off their connection to their history, make them no longer love their country. You cannot topple this oak tree of America or the West until you've poisoned the roots and rotted the foundation. And that's what they've spent the last century doing. And now it's paying off. From the 60s until today, while conservatives really didn't pay attention to what the left calls the long march through the institutions, conservatives just went to college, got a job in business or manufacturing or, you know, something unrelated to politics, found a spouse, got married, bought a house, raised their kids. The leftists were on what I consider a religious mission. It's like an evangelical process. The Marxists will use any disguise. They'll put on absolutely any subterfuge. They will lie to your face and say, I'm not a Marxist, because to them, it's a religion, and they will do anything that they think will advance the cause of Marxism, global international Marxism or communism.
So they took over. As you say, stepping into the institutions of government, the academic institutions in the United States, and especially trying to get a hold of our children in order to train them up.
Yes. And now with them having complete control of academia for at least the last 20 or 30 years, complete control, like a, you know, 98-2 ratio of college professors. Mm-hmm. I commonly frequently say college output is corporate input. It's CIA input. It's FBI input. If John Brennan, who admitted on his polygraph, voted for Gus Hall, a Soviet communist back in the Gulag era, if John Brennan could get into the CIA in the 70s, having admitted on his polygraph, I voted for Gus Hall. Not only that, I would like passed out leaflets. Then do you think that the student product coming out of college has gotten more left or less left since John Brennan? He rose to be the head of the CIA. James Comey was on social media for many years before he switched to using his own name. And the name he used on social media was a 20th century figure named Reinhold Niebuhr. And Reinhold Niebuhr was a communist Christian. This is where I say they'll use any camouflage. So Reinhold Niebuhr in the early mid 20th century was saying that Jesus Christ was the first Marxist. He was like a prophet of Marx, and that Jesus was the most Marxist that there could be in that year, in that era, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that Jesus was laying the way for Marx and Lenin and Stalin. So Reinhold Niebuhr, who wore a clerical collar and carried a cross, was trying to sell Americans on the idea that communism is the follow-through of Christianity.
Yeah, we're still seeing that today. Yeah.
And this is the man that James Comey describes as his great mentor, the biggest influence on his life. You know, the leading shining star of his life is a false Christian that promotes communism through subterfuge and camouflage. So how did these two guys rise to the top of the CIA and the FBI? So what do you think now is filling the CIA and FBI?
Of course. And you know, see that in the way that they behave as an institution. So let's go back to your article. What we're seeing today is we're seeing massive civil unrest. As you said, there's a thin veneer of civility over our society today. And that veneer is cracking very easily. We're seeing those cracks manifest themselves in the protests that are taking place daily. And I find it very insidious that many of these organizations, take Black Lives Matter, they've gotten very smart. They say, you know, if we tried to overthrow the government with weapons, we'd be put down very quickly as an insurrection. But if we come without weapons and we call ourselves, we come up with a slogan that nobody can disagree with, because I mean, who would disagree that Black Lives, you know, matter? So, but underlying that slogan is an organization that is diametrically opposed to saving Black lives, because they're
right.
pushing.
It's a Marxist outfit, and it's using the appropriate for today's slogan, Black Lives Matters, as a shield, because you cannot criticize the three words. And most Americans, let's face it, 2/3 of Americans are strictly first level thinkers. If you just say, do Black Lives Matter? You'll get 99% agreement.
Right.
Rightfully. But this is used as camouflage, as a shield. And similar to their allies, Antifa, which means anti-fascism. Mm-hmm. When Antifa was founded in Germany in the 1920s and 30s, they were fighting against the German National Socialists. And so they called themselves anti-fascists. Or in America, at the same period, when there were a lot, you know, before the Union era, when factories, let's admit it, they were like, you know, child labor or 12-hour mm-hmm. days,
right.
they were using Workers of the World Unite. So whatever the social issue that has people, you know, struggling, that nobody can be against, you know, who would be for, yeah, I'm for child labor, I'm for unsafe worker practices, you know, miners to die in mines. So they would look at that in the 1920s and 30s and say, okay, we're going to be for the miners and the factory workers, and use that as their shield, because nobody can be against that.
Right.
Now it's Black Lives Matter, but it's strictly a camouflage du jour.
So
that's what they do.
In your
and
article,
now it's worked.
It's absolutely working.
But even in the 20s and 30s, they were using the racial strife in America. During the Korean War, the Chinese and our, you know, to split our POWs up that were captured during the Korean War, it was strictly homing in on our civil rights, you know, problems, our Jim Crow laws. So whatever the chink in our armor is, they will expand that chink to become like a wall, you know, a shield for them. And most first level thinkers can't get past that. They don't know what happened to 10 years ago, much less 50 years ago. So they just hear Black Lives Matters. I must support them. That's it.
You say it's an ideology, and it definitely is, but I think it's more like a cult ideology, because when you lay a cult next to, say, Christianity, it espouses many of the same things, but it's just a couple percent off. And so they can lay it next to somebody who's a Christian and say, look, we're just like you are.
Yes.
But when you get down the road a couple clicks, that 2-degree separation actually gets pretty wide. Anybody that's ever done land navigation knows how that works. Now,
in Latin America, they actually use something called liberation theology.
Yes. Right.
I'll start with religion and then move to politics or law enforcement and intelligence. In Latin America, they used the guise of clerics, priests and nuns, that were really ideologically Marxists. But to appeal to the peasants who are very religious, they would constantly use a parallel of Jesus was like Marx, you know, Marxism and Catholicism, they're really the same. So it's a way to indoctrinate people who already will say, okay, well, if you're putting in terms I understand as Christianity or Catholicism, then I'll accept your message, which is secretly Marxism.
Right.
Now we've got people coming out of college going into the FBI, but they've been raised from middle school onward with the Howard Zinn, you know, Marxist view of the history of America. Mm-hmm. Then they go to college and it's constantly reinforced. They're not going to suddenly become Cold War, you know, right wing constitution defenders because they put on a gold FBI badge. Their ideology is that the Constitution is a racist relic of our disgraceful mm-hmm. past. Mm-hmm. And that as FBI agents, their job today is to defeat it and destroy it. This is why we see FBI in Washington, D.C. taking a knee to Black Lives Matter, you know, in FBI gear, taking a knee.
That's a disgrace. It
shouldn't surprise anybody.
It's a disgrace, though, but without a doubt.
That's all the time we've got for today with Matt Bracken, but I want you to hear more of this interview. And so we're going to come back again Wednesday and Friday with the remainder of my talk with author and former Navy SEAL Matt Bracken. I hope you'll be there.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Livefire Media. Copyright 2019.